Hey, folks. Before we get to our guest this week, I'm flying and we land in LaGuardia. And you know the deal. The minute the plane gets to the gate and there's that ding, ding, everybody stands up, gets in the aisle, pulls their stuff out, and then stands there. Okay. It doesn't achieve anything. It's just a physical manifestation of how badly you want to get off the plane and get home. Okay. I get that. No biggie. Okay. But the reality is, this one guy has a hair across his ass about the fact that people were standing up in the aisle and not doing it in orderly fashion. So in other words, like if you're in row 26, row 25 can get up ahead of you, but row 27, anybody in that row should not be stepping up like in line with his seat. So this guy is like hemming and hawing, is this, and he's making other people around, and he's talking. And I'm standing there, and I've talked about this on the podcast, how I tend to try to, I feel like I have to say stuff if people are jerks, and then it just ends up me stepping into a bigger pile of shit. But I'm standing there, and I finally just said, sir, do you not understand how air travel works? This is what people do. They get up because they just can't wait to get off of this thing and get home. And it doesn't achieve anything. But why are you getting so angry? Because what he did was he edged his way in between me and the guy in front of me, grabbed a bag, dropped it on the floor like he was marking his territory like a bear taking a shit in the woods. And then he sat back down in his seat, which the message was, hey, you're not getting past me, asshole. Like, really? So I tried to not say anything. Do you not understand how we're trying? What do you mean? I go, well, this is what people do. They get up, they stand in line. Why are you getting so agitated? Well, people should just do it by rows. I go, do you really? You want to get an air marshal to enforce this? So I said to him, maybe you should fly first class because, you know, then you could just leave whenever you want. And then he goes, well, you know, maybe you need to learn how to fly. I don't need to learn how to fly. First of all, I'm not flying. That didn't even make sense. It was like a six-year-old. And then secondly, I said, I don't need to learn anything. I understand how this works. I'm going to let you go ahead of me. No, go. You're in a hurry. I go, I'm not in that much of a hurry. You're angry. So I said, you know what? I said, you really should just have a private jet. Then you can just dispense with all of this. And he just looking down and he wouldn't say anything. Oh, by the way, married. Two little kids on the other side, the wife not saying anything, the kids, you know, it wasn't big yelling thing in front of the kids. But the point is, just shut up and sit there. If you don't like the process, just buy an airline, buy an airplane, travel by train, use a mule. How about a mule? Mule's fine. You get the whole back to yourself. It's a nice slow walk, you know. Yeah, your crotch is killing you for 6 or 7 months, but you know what? You don't have to wait for anybody standing on the middle of your mule, wait to get to the head of the mule. All right. I just had to get that off my shoulders or chest or some part of my body, my kneecap. My guest this week, Brian Huskey, my friend, very, very funny comedian. He is one of the stars of People of Earth on TBS. You've seen him in a million things. He's been on the show before. Really, really funny guy, great improv actor, and really cool conversation. Please keep checking out the podcast. Spread the links around. We want to keep building the numbers, okay? I need some bigger numbers, folks. So please start spreading the link around and asking your friends to subscribe. I think I'm giving you guys great guests. And please go leave me some nice comments on iTunes if you like the podcast. That always helps. All right, enjoy Brian Huskey and be patient when getting off a plane. We're recording now with my friend and former commercial acting co-star friend.
Hockmeister.
Hockmeister. Star of A Better You, great film that you made with Matt Walsh. Thanks. You've seen him in Veep, Wet American Hot Summer, Children's Hospital. And he plays Richard Schenck on People of Earth, which is on TBS on Mondays at 10:30. What's your name again? Oh, Brian Huskey. Welcome to the show again.
Brian. Thank you so much, Paul. It is great to connect with you. I am on the West Coast. You're on the East Coast.
Yes.
You're in the future. I'm in the past.
I'm actually in Madison, Wisconsin right now. I'm doing a little work out here.
You're still in the future, relative to me, right?
Yes, exactly.
Aren't you? What do you mean a little workout? You're just, you go to Wisconsin to just pump iron, or what's that mean?
No, I said out here. You guys said.
Oh, I thought you said I'm out here doing a little workout. Yeah.
Well, there's a gym that I joined, and it's so cheap that I.
that makes sense.
You know, the airfare is killing me, but it was such a great deal with the gym, I couldn't pass it up. So,
you know, if it's good, if it makes you feel good, and it's good for your body, I say whatever the price, great.
How are you, my friend? I miss you. I think we tried to get together when I was in LA one trip, but you were busy, I think, with your daughter running around or one of your cults or whatever it is that you do out there.
Yeah. I was trying to get my daughter into a pretty high profile cult. And so the vetting process is, you know, intense.
Yes.
So that didn't pan out. I'm okay. I mean, we just discovered that my landline is dead, which is not great because I'm paying for this thing I never use anyway, in case there's an earthquake. Now I know it doesn't work. Exactly. And then my toilet's leaking at the base. And
oh, that's not
the guy who's supposed to come by. No. And so the guy was supposed to come today, and then he bailed just like a little bit before. Like when I have a home issue, my brain just goes and just falls apart. And so I was thinking about like how disgusting my home is because I have a leaky toilet. And he bailed, and then I forgot that we were supposed to talk today, so I apologize for that.
No, I'm doing this under an intense amount of guilt because I feel like you've got a lot going on. You're obviously, your life is falling apart around you, and I'm taking up
it
the
is.
Time.
It is.
Are you like a super neat, clean person? I mean, you're very well kept. You know, your beard is well kept, and you have nice eyebrows when I've been with you. But
yeah. I try to keep what hairs I have on my body in check because I value them so much. But now I'm like, when the toilet thing is like, oh, that's gross. Look at that.
Yeah. Where are you going to the bathroom?
Cleaned it up.
Where are you going to the bathroom right now?
We're using it. It's not like a crazy explosion. It's just kind of like a subtle, like little leak, leak. Leak, leak, you know, but it could lead to floor damage and crashings and septic horribles. Yeah. So I'm nipping it in the bud, but I'm also, I was away shooting because we shoot People of Earth in Toronto. Mm-hmm. So there's a learning curve that I've been experiencing of going from living like a bachelor for 2.5 months on and off to being a full-time father person. It's hard.
you should have researched that a little bit before you impregnated somebody, don't you think?
Well, I was in the pocket for a long time, you know, and then my wife and I are not together, so I'm a solo dad when I have her. But if you get a taste of, you know,
freedom
myself. Yeah, freedom. 20 years ago, like what my daily routine used to be, it is so good.
Especially, they put you up at a hotel? Are you doing the apartment or what? Because
we had to do an Airbnb thing.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah. It's pretty good.
You should have told me. I would have come up and hung out.
They give you money for
it. I would have come on.
I know.
We could have partied up there. I think are we too old to say that word partied? I don't know. Maybe we are.
Maybe. I don't even know if that's the terminology they have now. I've been trying to get my dog to teach me lingo, and she's very withholding. And then if I say, I mean, there's no way. I don't want to use the lingo because I just sound horrible. Yeah. You know, if I'm like, oh, I'm all shook about this, she's like, oh God, shut up, Dad.
How old is she?
You're right. She's 10.
Oh, that's hilarious. So, I went into a bar last night. It was just like, just to see, because it was so noisy, and I don't like noisy places, whatever. I just wanted to see because it's across from my hotel, and every night there's something going on. And I go in, and I wasn't really focused. I'm kind of looking down. I show my ID. I go in, and I look up, and I am the oldest person in there by 25 years. It was all 21-year-old college students, and
they're
all looking at me like, who's the pedophile that just walked in here? Like I was completely.
Totally.
So I stayed.
You just need to start calling out for your. It's like, has anyone seen Tiffany? My daughter? Is my daughter Tiffany here? Right. She is underage.
Hold up a picture of some random girl that's not even any remotely.
Yeah, just pull up something from the internet and like make it your picture.
What do you do with downtime up in Toronto when you're not shooting?
I'm really into badminton.
Are you
like,
really?
Not kidding. No. Oh yeah. Not no irony to it. Like I really, cause I'm not good at, or I'm not, I won't say I'm not good at sports. I never was pushed to do sports and my proclivity was just like, I'm just going to eat candy and watch TV as a kid. So
that's
I just
sport.
Never tested. Yeah. That is a total sport. I was really pushing my body to its limits. But I just never tried any stuff. So, but when I just like, when I was in my 20s, 30s, I started getting into it in the summer with my friend and we got really obsessed. And then when I was up in New York, when I lived back in New York, my friend Jason and I used to go to Prospect Park and set up a net and measure it off and got really into like playing it. And it is a great like workout because you just like, if you get a professional birdie and you get professional rackets, you can like really like, like zip it around.
I mean, I tend to watch it when the Olympics come around, and the speed and the dexterity and the reflexes, and there's an aerobic aspect to it. Absolutely.
Yeah. Super fun. So I found a drop-in badminton thing at this rec center near my house, and I became buddies with like Joe, the retired mailman, Paris, the super uptight IT guy, and then Chris, the graphic designer. And we would like play with each other. So I do that. And then I was doing some writing because I have another, I did a special last year for Adult Swim.
I wanted to talk to you about that. Yeah. You're doing another one?
We can talk about it. Yeah, we're doing another one. Yeah. So I was working on that. We thought we were going to shoot it in the fall, but schedule stuff got messy. So,
well, the special is so dark. It's so funny and so you. It's Mr. Neighbor's House, and it's
right.
You basically, you're Norman Bates, basic to me. Like I'm watching it, and it's like this innocent but dark, dark thing going on with you and then I just love the open and things are going on like the woman, an old woman eats a dog and then shits hot dogs. Like I'm like, this is awesome. This is totally Husky's brain. This is awesome. You did it with Jason, right? So
that's the badminton buddy Jason Mandzukas, mm-hmm. and then UCB our friend Jesse Falcon, mm-hmm. UCB guy, mm-hmm. All these guys, Jesse Falcon. So we all do a show, a weekly improv show still here in Los Angeles. And then Rob Corddry, you know, who I worked with for a long time, was another EP on it. Rob, you know, he did Children's Hospital and they sort of had this thing of like, oh, if you have any other ideas, and he couldn't think of anything. And then we just pitched them that. And we had done it originally as a pilot, and then Adult Swim was like, well, we're not going to do this as a series. But
oh, really? Because I was looking at that going, this should be a series. That sucks. You should take it somewhere else or get it on digital. Come on, get your toilet fixed and get your shit together, will you? No pun intended.
We're trying.
No,
we're
I
trying
just
so hard.
So you know, for people who haven't seen it, go online. It's hilarious, but sort of give a little backstory on it. And how was this something that was born out of a sketch that you did at one time or just a whole?
No, mm-hmm. It literally was just a conversation we had after a show, improv show, where we just started talking about how like a lot of 70s kids shows had this kind of like weird dark menace to it. And you know, watching it now, but like the stuff we grew up watching, and they were like, oh, we should do a fucked up kid show, and so that's what it was. And the original idea was like that Mr. Neighbor was this guy who had been doing this kid show for, you know, a few years, and at one point he started to lose his mind, and he started to write, but he didn't know he was losing his mind, so like the content of the show reflected like what was going on with him. Mm-hmm. And since we didn't have since we were like, well, we don't know if we're ever going to get to do this again, we should just kind of bookend it. We gave it the ending that we have now that I'm not going to reveal because, you know, hopefully people are like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah. But so, can I be a geek and quote one line that just had me on the floor?
Oh yeah. Oh please.
it's early on in your birthday and you with the puppet kid about like getting gifts, and you know, and one of the gifts you want, you say, is some people want their mother to return home after walking out on them 31 years ago. And then you turn to the fireplace. Oh my God, that was so funny. I'm sorry. I'm totally geeking out on you, but it was hilarious. But you do it with that smile on your face, but then you feel like at any second you're going to grab a knife and stab anybody within 10 feet of you.
I'm really happy. I'm so happy you watched it. That's great.
Oh, yeah. You know, I'm kind of a research nerd, but I could watch all day. But I didn't. And by the way, we did a commercial together, and it was still some of the most fun I've had performing because you're so brilliant as an improviser.
Yeah.
And
that was awesome.
And I want to work with you more someday, but it was great. And I'm curious, have you gotten, you've done so much and you're so established now. Have you sort of, are you just generally given a little bit more leeway by the writers, producers, directors to kind of play with the script? I know you probably do the first take online and then sort of they let you play, but do you have the point or do you feel comfortable like the night before saying, hey, you know, this line here, I think it would be better this way, or do you still kind of tread lightly in that way?
It depends. I'm now learning, like, if you end up doing like a network show, like if I'm a guest star part on a network show, they're not as open to that. And yeah. I think it's not so much like the creatives. I think it's more the networks themselves. They want to make sure like what they signed off
yes
on is what they're going to end up with. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like I did a thing for the Mindy Project last year and I improvised a bunch of stuff and I ran into an editor and he was like, oh man, your improv stuff was great. And I was like, did it make in? He's like, no, we couldn't use any of it. But it was great for us. I was like, cool.
Private show.
Three guys enjoyed it.
Yeah,
well, totally.
Well, that makes sense. The networks at that level is so
good. But it depends. It depends. I mean, I do sort of, you know, I'll ask or I'll sort of say, you know, I'll pitch like you were saying, like a variation on a line and stuff. Yeah. And we do that in People of Earth. We'll be like, sort of say like, this doesn't feel right. Like, I feel like if I say it this way, it'll be the same idea and it'll come out a little, I'll have a little more ownership of it.
Yeah.
Unless it's like, you know, unless it really are like, no, this is, we love this joke as is. But the hard thing there with People of Earth was the writer's room is in Los Angeles and they write everything. And then we go to Toronto and we're shooting. And so if we wanted to come up with and we had an on-set writer, Aaron Scher, who's awesome and super funny, and he would pitch us stuff. But if we would have stuff that we wanted to pitch, he would have to call, you know, 3 hours to the past here and try to get the showrunner's approval, and yeah, you know, it got to be a little bit of a wonky thing.
But as you're, this is the second season now, and your character, your mm-hmm. wife's been, at the end of the last season you had a girlfriend but robot, and then she gets destroyed and
she blows up in front of me.
Yeah, exactly. And do you, this sort of goes a little bit to what we were just talking about. Do you sort of, did you give any input, like where the character arc would go in the second season? You're not just an actor. You're obviously, you're a great writer. You're a producer, director. So I would welcome Shitty Father, but the rest of it's great.
Right. Terrible toilet.
Yeah, exactly. Cannot handle his own toilet. But I would personally, I tend to be collaborative anyway, but if I were sort of in the shoes of the showrunner, I would welcome any input from somebody like you. Do you feel comfortable doing that?
They Yeah, they actually, any of the actors who wanted to come in and sort of say, like, give their take on how, like, either how they, like, how they feel about their character, what they think their character's sort of, like, internal, you know, struggle with being abducted and then trying to sort of just, like, figure out what it is to exist in the world. Mm. You know, like we kind of started from that place of just like, well, who do you think the character is, and how do you feel like you've been playing them, apart from how we see it? Mm. So we would sort of talk about that, and then they'd like, do you have any stuff that you think would be good to have happen? And I just my initial pitch was just like, at the end of the season, like every perspective he has on reality has been shattered. Like his marriage is over. You know, he thinks he's found new love, and it turns out to be a robot. And then he discovers that his paranoia about reptilians is true, and that they're actually fucking with him. Mm. And so, you know, it's like, I was like, short of him losing his mind, I think he would be almost losing his mind. So that's what this season they started off. I just was like in a wheelchair, like just convalescing and kind right. of like had given up and stuff.
Well, I was going to say, it was that, but that's kind of a hard place to start a character, right? Right. I mean, sort of, you kind of, did you welcome that? Cause that's a challenge. I mean, to pull all that off, not just the writing, but the acting too.
Yeah. And it was really, and then the challenge on top of it was, I was like, probably one of the sickest, had one of the worst colds I've ever had in my life when we first started shooting. It was this like this cold, this virus that was running through Toronto, and our director got it and our producer got it. And it was just like going around. Then I got it. So the day that we shot like all the sort of first episode stuff, mm-hmm. I just felt like shit. Mm-hmm. So it was like that. And then,
I can't imagine that, because you're such a prick on set when you're not sick. I can't imagine.
Yeah.
How cranky. God. Oh my God. He made a little girl cry one time.
The good thing is, like, I'm just weaker. Like I don't have, I can't access my power.
You're still angry, but you just don't have the strength anymore when you're that sick to lift your hand and backhand somebody for not listening to you. That's what happens, right?
It's just a lot of glaring. It's like it's like Stephen Hawking giving you like a real shit look.
Oh God.
But that's what it is like for people.
So did you you wanted the character that was some of the stuff that you sort of contributed over the summer, that you wanted the character to have to go to this really bad, dark place, because you just felt like there was a lot of fun to be had there, and then you could take it somewhere.
Well, yeah, I mean, we always were just like, what are the real circumstances around this kind of experience, you know, because it's like, we, you know, a big thing that we all try to put in place is that we don't make fun of the characters, like that we respect them and kind of are empathetic to what they're going through. Mm. And then on top of that, you just sort of say you have this sort of like, but they're also unusual characters. And so how would Richard deal with this? Or how would Tracy Chimo deal with Chelsea, you know, with all these kind of things. So, I didn't think it would be a good move for us just to be like, oh yeah, and now they're just kind of back in action and it's all good. Because then it sort of, it doesn't follow, because if we're doing like a serialized approach to this, then we have to kind of follow the story and the arc of each character. And everybody, there's so many characters that everybody has all these little stories. And so you have to make the most of what little time you're going to get to sort of check in with the character. So
when you say what little time you're going to get to check in with the character, what do you mean by that?
I just mean, there's so many, you know, there are what, like 11 or 12 storylines to follow,
right,
like respectively with each, all the characters and how they kind of link up.
Right.
So, you know, you can't, as much as that episode was sort of like, oh, this is kind of Richard's episode and the introduction of Nassim's character. Mm. And then kind of unpacking everything that happened previously.
Yeah.
You still end up like there's tons of stuff that gets cut out, which gets to be frustrating for us shooting because, you know, they have to overwrite the scripts to kind of try to get everything they can about all the storylines, but then you just get like really a third of what we kind of shoot.
Yeah, because you said, I was reading and you said, I'm quoting, sometimes the writing continues once it's up on its feet, which, you know, obviously mm-hmm. is, you'll do your first take generally with as the lines are written, but then additional takes and let you kind of go off. And you're saying they've mm-hmm. overwritten, so they have you doing even longer additional scenes or parts of that scene that they've written. So all of that means all of this extra material that's coming out, right?
Well, it just seems like, I think that quote meant that if we improvise, we improvise to the story.
Yeah.
In support of the story. Like, we don't invent new story points because mm-hmm. we can't. Right. Follow up with them at all. Right. You know, it has to be very tightly written.
Right.
But I think a lot of times, once we get on our feet, what we think, you know, when we think like, oh, this scene's going to have this emotional impact and it's going to play this way, it doesn't quite work. So we have to be flexible to be like, okay, this is what we're going for in this scene.
Yeah.
But the way it's written isn't quite accomplishing that. So let's try it from this approach, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? And mm-hmm. I think that's just standard to acting stuff. It's like a lot of times what you think is sort of if you don't have the time and luxury to sort of like rehearse it like a play and you just have to like, all right, we're blocking. What's the scene? Is this, that doesn't feel right.
Right.
What if we did it this way? That feels right.
Right. And so you've got some, right. Like, you've got writers just for people who don't, like, you know, they're fans of the TV and film, but maybe don't understand the process. And you've got to write at least a couple of writers there to quickly kind of rewrite a scene or tag it or whatever, because it's just sort of, you know, it's no different than, you know, the Late Show or the with Colbert that I work on now, or the Daily Show. It's sort of, you know, you mm-hmm. can write the jokes all day, but then at 4 o'clock when you rehearse it, it can be a completely different animal, you know? So you have to be prepared for rewrites.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very different thing than when you're sitting and talking ideas and writing down lines and stuff, and then putting it on its feet or putting it into action. A lot of times it's like, oh, this isn't quite what we thought it would be. And then you just want to kind of avoid that place of being stymied by a moment. And one interesting thing about the show is because we had asked, like, when they write the script, they overwrite it. And a lot of times they'll have each character sort of say their want or the stakes that they're sort of chasing mm-hmm. repeatedly within an episode. And we're like, this feels redundant. And we found out that they do that so that they can, in editing, choose their moments of like, okay, here's this plot point and it works best in this moment in this scene, so we don't need to sort of have it here or here. So we'll just take that out. And so it's good for us to know that because mm-hmm. otherwise we were sort of like, these guys aren't good writers.
they're cutting it. They come up with a really good line, they like, and they cut it and paste it 4 other times into the script, and then go have lunch.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Like, you've been doing this so long and you still are learning something in this process of.
Yeah. Well, essentially, I mean, it's amazing that you can do it for so long and that people can come up with new approaches to doing it. Mm. You know, and I think that's a Greg Daniels thing that happened on The Office, that they would kind of write more than they needed and know that, you know, a fifth of it or a third or something would go away. Mm. But that they had that they were covered as far as like making sure they got certain plot points or emotional moments covered.
Yeah. Yeah. I know Carell said to me that they would sort of really overshoot and really let them go. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some weeks, some of the improvised stuff would get in quite a bit or not at all. It just depended, again, like you said, on plot points and where the script is going and all that. But, you know, your character type, you said, is, you love your character type, and I certainly do. It's and you said it's very straight, and then having some dark or insane thing come from me is a nice combo. And did you just you know, you, I know you were a photographer before this, and then you, you were rooming with Rob Corddry, and he said, you're really funny, you should start doing improv, and you did. And so, and as part of improv training for people listening is you do character, you learn how to build characters, write and create and build them in deep, you know, multidimensional characters. Was this something that you discovered like way back then, that this was your thing that was particularly unique to you, or did this just evolve over time?
You mean the kind of
your character type, the you know, the straight guy with the sort of the dark thing that comes from that can come from that person, you know, kind of.
It like early on, that was one of the hardest things. I think that's one of the hardest things for any performer to figure out, like, you know, for a stand up to figure out what their voice is, for an actor to sort of have a greater understanding of how people see them, because how you see yourself and what your own personal experience or sort of like lens on the world is very different than, you know, how other people experience you. And then you're also not aware of what you kind of give off. So it took me a long time to be like, oh, people just see me as a very, you know, straight white managerial type looking, you know, professor, doctor, you know, kind of like a lower rung authority figure. But there's something in me, which I do think, like, I like dark ideas. I like sort of like really tough emotions and sort of like, you know, levels of denial that people deal with and anger and, you know, the kind of the darker aspects of it everybody has that they sometimes feel like they should keep at bay or fight back. Like,
well, I was just going to say, you read my mind. It's way more interesting to watch someone. And, you know, this is also comes from my own acting experience and my acting coaches. It's way more interesting watching someone trying to fight off being angry than actually being angry. It's just, really compelling, and you're great at that.
Yeah.
But where did this sort of this attraction to it comes from? Just, it's in your DNA, or as a kid, did you sort of like, did you gravitate to darker kind of stuff or life, what hard life experiences or?
Yeah, I think of that. I mean, I grew up, like, my mom remarried, and the guy she remarried was a bit of a drinker, and he was an angry guy, you know. And as a kid, I was actually talking to my daughter about him the other day, and she's like, did you love him? I was like, I did love him, but he was confusing to me. Because, you know, as a kid, you see adults who are like, why are you angry? I don't really understand what you're angry about. But he had a lot of stuff that he grew up with. Yep. So just by exposure, you kind of absorb it, and I think in a good way, like, that's one of the things I love about, like, improv, and that I finally let myself, you know, be an actor and stuff, is that you can channel it and kind of, you can reframe it and do something with it, as opposed to having it sort of really sit in your stomach or, you know, whatever. I think it's, everyone is shaped by their experiences, and so I think that stuff definitely kind of added into it. But that being said, like, I've always loved sort of like Don Knotts is one of my heroes.
Oh yeah.
And, you know, and I love that idea of the person who's unaware of their status and kind of like works hard against that.
Yeah.
So I think I've always been attracted to that, you know, that comic combination of, he knows not what he does, or, you know, self-aware.
He and Andy Griffith, a great team. And he was a really great straight man for Don Knotts, because he would just sit there.
Yeah.
If you didn't know better, you'd think, well, Andy was the deputy and Mm-hmm. Barney was the Don Knotts character was the sheriff, and then you know you could see Andy let it, you know, would let the leash go for a certain period of time and then just yank the leash back and put him back in his place. And it was really, really good writing, good character development, you know, even you know, and I just think that, you know, I know exactly what you mean about, you know, you start out doing stand up in particular. I know you said you and Cordry went and even tried to do it, but just decided you didn't want to. But you're so afraid up there, yeah. I think that you just want to be funny. And I think your instinct is to try to be funny with stuff that everybody relates to. So they like you and they laugh at you. And it takes time to be comfortable up there. And I mean this not in a joking way, not give a shit enough to just talk about what you want to talk about and you. And that takes a while because it's a very unnatural thing to be on stage performing for people, you know?
Yeah. So, and it is it's a very kind of like zen realization, those moments like as a performer where you're like, oh, the harder I try, the less success I'm, you know, the less success I'm going to have in sort of achieving my goal. But the more I invest in myself expressing something and I have a good idea that's expressing it, you know, that's the thing that gets to people. And you know, people can sort of smell fear, or they can smell desperation, or if it's not, genuine. And then it kind of gets in there, but then the hardest thing is like, there's ego attached to all of it, you know? And so even if you're being as genuine as you feel you can, you know, you're being like, this is all me, and it doesn't land or people don't accept it. Then it's kind of like, oh, you don't like me.
Yeah.
You don't like who I am.
Yeah.
But that is the risk of it. You know, that is the.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if I'm doing some stuff that's either new or that's even tried and true and it's not working, I still have to fight the urge to run for cover, which is to go to the tried and true, you know, whatever. And, you know, and every once in a while I do run for cover and then I beat myself up and call myself a pussy for 2 days, you know, and whatever. And I'm swimming around the house, like mad at myself, but you know, we're human beings and everything else. But there's I really love talking about this with you because for people listening, just, you know, just the character, discussion of character development, of, you know, these are comedies, but this show is so great because there's so many sort of aspects to each character and you can really see real people's problems coming through, not just the people in the group, but the aliens.
Yeah.
And I love that the fact that the aliens sort of, it's a great way to take a perspective, 30,000 foot view of our life on Earth from somebody else's perspective and sort of, that's got to be fun to be part of that and write that and be part of the, you know, in some small way for you, part of the writing. But I like that is, there's a lot going on in the show, which I really love about it.
Yeah, me too. Like, yeah, I think I think the second season really, they leaned into a lot of, and I think it benefited from us knowing what we're doing with the characters and stuff, but they could really lean into following, like, all right, like with the aliens, there's like now they're working within this corporate structure, and what does it feel like to sort of be overlooked, or you know, or to sort of to feel pitted against one another?
And the weird thing is like, this may not make any sense, but like when you see an alien experiencing a similar human emotion that you would experience, it somehow highlights the emotion more. You know what I mean? I don't know why. Visual. Maybe it's a visual thing, but you mentioned the disappointment, you know, and a very relatable thing if you get passed over for a promotion, but somehow when you see the alien feeling and talking like a regular human being, I don't know. It somehow highlights it more. It puts more of a spotlight on it.
Yeah, it's really interesting. That guy, Ken Hall, plays Jeff the alien. He's like the little short guy. And I think he's kind of becoming the star of the show because everyone just loves him. And he's like an angry little guy. But he's also like, but there is something like, I'm always amazed what they're able to do with like how, like really reading emotion, you know, like Because it's a nightmare for him. Like, he has to wear this gigantic prosthetic thing on his head, and he can't see very well and can't hear very well. Mm. But then when they kind of do, because they sort of animate his eyes and stuff. Mm-hmm. But just the combination of stuff, like, works out really well.
Yeah.
And I think it's also they've gotten really good at him, giving him stuff where he can kind of pivot between defensive and then being really open, or right, defensive and then wanting to be accepted, you know?
Right. Right. I think a third place he can go is he's in charge, you know, like, mm-hmm, you know, and so there's just a lot going on with that, the writing of that character, it seems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's cool.
Yeah.
It's I'm glad for him that's the case, because knowing like what he kind of goes through to shoot it, I would hate it if he was just like, oh God, I'm just like,
right,
I'm just sweating my ass off for nothing.
Yeah, exactly. All right, listen, I know you, you probably got to go to Starbucks to go to the bathroom. And,
Hey, listen, I got to go get my child.
Go get your child. Go get your child.
Cause
please.
I'm a good dad. I'm a good dad.
You know, you've been in Toronto going to strip clubs and playing badminton and all that. You got to focus on your family.
Yeah.
So when's your special going to come out? Cause will you come on and talk about your special and we'll plug it and all that stuff?
Oh, I'd love to. Oh my God. I'd love to. I could hopefully give you a pre, early cut of it.
It's so funny. Please, everybody, go watch it.
I don't know. I had to kind of like, you know,
yeah,
set aside my dreams of like, I was hoping to get it done this year, mm-hmm, by the end of the year, but I don't think we're even going to get to shoot it until like sometime in the winter.
Shooting this winter. Okay.
So it'll probably come out spring or summer of 18.
All right. Purpose. Well, listen, everybody go online and watch Mr. Neighbor's House.
And you can get on YouTube. You can buy it for like $2 on YouTube, or you can try to find it on the Adult Swim website, but they sure make it hard
Okay. Well, you know, with the meeting on that was like, look, you know, we could go with the pack and make it user friendly, but let's zag on this. Instead,
you know,
of zig.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's be artsy. Yeah. Be artsy in everything we do.
Not a lot of pop-ups. I think we need a lot of pop-ups.
A lot of dead links.
God. All right, listen.
Thank you, Paul.
Yeah, it's always great.
Always,
man.
Great to talk to you.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I come to LA again, which may be soon, I'll give you a ring and hopefully we can get together. What night is your show? I'd love to come see it if I'm there.
It's Fridays.
All right.
Okay. Fridays at 9:30.
All right. And
yeah,
the show is People of Earth, 10:30, Mondays, TBS, and the funniest man on the planet, Brian Husky.
So ooh,
no, I'm
I'll
serious,
take it.
Man. I'm serious, man. You make me laugh so hard. I can watch you just, you know, water a lawn, which you probably should do. But anyway.
I probably should.
Yeah, thanks for being on, and good luck with the toilet. I'll talk to you soon. All right, there you go. That was Brian Husky. So funny. I could talk to him all day. Poor guy, leaking toilet, and a little kid. That's kind of sucks. All right, listen, please, we want to keep building the numbers. If you guys can get any of your friends to subscribe, pass this around, that'd be great. And please go leave some nice comments over on iTunes if you like the podcast. That always helps getting the word out. And we will see you next week, everybody.